This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
James Motzkowicz joins me on the program. He's an attorney with the firm of Fleischman & Harding in Washington, D.C. He's got over a decade of experience with telecommunications issues and represents providers of telecommunications, broadband, cable services, on a whole host of matters, including regulatory, transactional, and litigation issues. James, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well today. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. I've asked you to be on this program because there was news recently about the FCC and the Washington District Court and Comcast, and it just confused the heck out of me. I didn't really know what was going on. I heard people talking about it. You do this for a living. You think about this kind of stuff all day. So tell us first, and we want to talk about today net neutrality, the internet, the future of the internet, and specifically what's happening legally and politically with this issue, because these legal and political issues, if folks don't realize it now, they better wake up, because what is being decided now is going to impact anybody who goes online. And so remind us first, briefly, what this case was and what was the decision.
Well, sure. The case stemmed from a dispute between a company called BitTorrent, which was a provider of a peer-to-peer service, and Comcast. And I believe it was out in California, I believe, where some of the activities took place. And Comcast had concerns that their network was getting congested by these peer-to-peer services, and so they started blocking the services. The way they were blocking the service appeared to be focused on BitTorrent and its application, and BitTorrent filed a number of suits which worked their way through court and through the FCC, and ultimately the FCC negotiated with Comcast, some of it quite publicly, to get Comcast to sort of stop doing what they were doing and blocking the BitTorrent application. And I'm making this very much shorter story than it actually is. And at the end of this whole process, the FCC also issued a forfeiture order against Comcast that basically assessed a fine against them. And then Comcast, not liking that and not really thinking that the FCC had the jurisdiction to do what it was they were attempting to do, even though Comcast had decided that they weren't going to really fight it and essentially stopped blocking or stopped engaging in the specific practices that the FCC had the concern with, fought it. It went into the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. And the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals struck them down. And just by the way, for people in the industry, I'm not sure that the ruling itself was particularly surprising, because in the oral arguments, the judges pretty much came out and appeared to be asking the FCC, how they would like to lose this case. There was also a very big procedural issue.
Yeah, we're talking with James Motzkowicz live from Washington. He's been working on these telecommunications issues for over 10 years, an attorney with Fleischman and Harding LLP. So, James, just to sort of dumb this down a little bit, we're talking about net neutrality, which is this geeky term, but it basically means that everything on the net, all the folks who own the tubes that carry the information to your home or your computer, wherever it is, these folks have to treat everything that's going over the tubes equally. They can't treat some websites better than others and tier the web like you have tiered cable television, where you buy into a low tier, and if you want to pay a little bit more, you can get more channels. Right now, the internet's not like that. It's not tiered like cable television, but the people who own the tubes, the Comcast of the world, they would like to do that. They could make more money if they did that and said, well, if you want to buy a basic internet package, it's this, but if you really want to access all the popular websites, you have to pay more.
Well, that could be a way of doing it. And in fact, one of the problems that there has been with regards to net neutrality is actually getting everybody to agree on a definition of what it means. But I think at its core, what net neutrality means is that a network provider can't discriminate against content on the web or applications or content that are flowing over over the internet.
Right, right. Okay.
And so there's a lot of different ways that that can happen. So, I mean, the tiering is one way. Although I think that, you know, I think that there are probably ways that even under the current rules or even under the FCC's current net neutrality, that there could be some tiering permitted. It's all just in a question of how it's done.
Yeah, we're talking with James Moskowitz live from Washington. So what's going to happen now? I was reading today that, you know, proponents of net neutrality, the folks who want to keep the internet free so that you don't have to pay extra to get to certain, certain websites like you do on cable television, they're urging the FCC to change its classification. What does this mean?
Yeah, and this goes back to sort of what the DC Circuit did in the Comcast case. Basically, the DC Circuit said, "Look, you FCC have said that you're regulating this under Title I of this being the internet service, broadband service under Title I of the Communications Act. But Title I really only gives you something called ancillary jurisdiction, and as ancillary jurisdiction, it has to be ancillary to something." And that to something needs to come from, you know, some other substantive authority Congress gave the FCC elsewhere in the Act. But you didn't point to anything there that we can really agree is sort of a primary jurisdiction.
Yeah.
So therefore, you don't have ancillary jurisdiction. It's not ancillary to anything. And so that now the FCC is in the position of having to go back and say, okay, well, geez, where does that leave me? I mean, clearly I can't have the net neutrality principles, which myself, based on the legal reasoning that I used in the prior rule. What do I do now? Can I go back and can I sort of come to the same conclusion but use a different legal rationale, or do I need to go back and find another source of authority entirely? One ways of getting another source of authority would be if they. And I'm trying to make this as simple as possible.
Yeah.
Is if they go back
Thank
and sort
you.
of change almost a decade or more worth of their commission precedent about how they're going to treat broadband and internet services. So before they said that, look, we're going to treat this as we're going to exert jurisdiction over a communications service, but we're not going to regulate it as a common carriage service under Title II. For a bunch of reasons, they did that. And now what everybody's asking is one saying, well, you know, your approach of trying to do it under Title I of the Communications Act doesn't really seem to be working so well. You know, why don't you just, you know, sort of wave your regulatory wand
yeah.
and we'll call it a telecommunications service, and therefore you have jurisdiction over it under Title II.
We're talking with Attorney James Moskowitz live from Washington. He's been working on telecommunications and broadband issues for over a decade. So what is the benefit to the consumer, to those of us who pay an internet bill and we go online every day? What's the benefit to us if the FCC regulates the internet? I mean, the knee-jerk reaction of an American is, I don't want any regulation. But from what I've read, the regulation they want to do actually does help consumers to a certain degree.
Yeah, and you know, that obviously the answer to that question is going to depend on you know, your view on that depends on where you sit. You will hear sort of the same arguments coming from both sides of the issue. That is, the opponents of net neutrality will say that that leaving it unregulated will lower rates and provide, you know, freer internet access, whereas proponents of net neutrality will say, you know, the exact opposite. So it's hard to say, but I think that the main concern that net neutrality is trying to get at is one essentially of monopoly. It's where you have one provider or two providers that you can get your information, you can get your internet access from, and there's a concern that those monopolists, whoever they may be, that have that pipe into your house, start vertically integrating all of their operations to the exclusion or to the harm of their competitors, and that would drive up, you know, lessen public utility so that people would have fewer choices, and it may also raise the prices. So I mean, for the end user, the concern would be that if you don't do net neutrality, then if you have provider X, you're only going to be able to get VoIP service from provider X, and you're only going to be able to get video services from provider X, and you're only going to be able to get YouTube or whatever search engine type functions from provider X. That's the worst case scenario.
But that is a scenario that could happen, that you live in an area where there's only like one internet provider, and when you get on there, you realize, oh, I can only access part of the internet.
Right, or I can access part of the internet, but it's really slow. But I can access the other pieces. These are really kind of fast, and it could be not necessarily so obvious what's going on, and that,
right.
That's another concern.
Yeah, that you might not realize what's happening when you're just sitting there waiting for a page to download. You might realize, gosh, Google just doesn't download as quickly as it used to. It's not really coming in fast, but Yahoo comes in very, very quickly, so I'm going to start using Yahoo.
Exactly.
And you wouldn't realize that this was a decision made by your internet provider to forcibly, secretly make Google load slow.
Right, and just to be clear, we're talking theoretically here. That's right. I mean, those are the types of concerns that proponents of net neutrality have been raising.
Yeah.
And obviously now the people who are against net neutrality say, well, that's all hypothetical. Why don't we just deal with these issues as they arise? Now there's a flip side to this too, and that is that the companies that built out these networks feel that they have invested a lot of money in building the networks out, and that they have some expectation of return on that investment. And by having the government come in and essentially dictate sort of the structure of the market through a net neutrality requirement, that they could be upsetting the investment decisions of the people who are building out these networks, and basically created a disincentive to have higher speed networks built out, or to the extent that the networks are built out, customers could see very high, much higher prices for their basic internet connection. So
yeah, which is a valid argument. I mean, these companies, they didn't do this on public money. They made their own investment to build these tubes to bring the internet to your home, and they want to be able to do what they want with them.
That's right. That's right.
We're talking
And in some cases, they invested a lot of money, and if they feel that maybe they weren't going to do all of the horrible things that net neutrality proponents were talking about, but maybe they were intending to bundle some services together to give themselves a preference in a few areas that they felt that would give them a value add that would essentially subsidize the cost of the network. And absent that subsidy, they're going to have to get the money back somewhere.
We're talking with James Moskowitz. He is an attorney with Fleischman and Harding in Washington, D.C., a telecommunications, broadband, and cable services expert. Been working on these issues for over a decade. James, what fascinates you most? I mean, as you're working on this stuff, what are you really interested in about what's going on in this particular area that we're talking about?
Well, I think right now it's a time of significant change in uncertainty, and that always makes things interesting for providers and for attorneys. I think it's just going to be very interesting in the near term to see, what course the FCC decides to take in how they're going to address the jurisdictional issue that confronts them. They have a number of options. They have three options. One is they can make a big break with the past and come up with a new precedent. For example, classifying broadband services as a Title II service, and therefore it's regulated under Title II. And that's sort of like a big deal, sort of big break, and that would allow them to, potentially get on stronger footing or have the whole thing kicked over in court. The other option is they could continue on in sort of a piecemeal fashion and try and craft sort of jurisdictional fixes on a case-by-case basis for each little regulatory move they wanted to make.
Yeah.
And then the third thing they could do is wait for Congress to do something.
Yeah, well, that was my next question, the political will of this. Politicians are so afraid to endorse any kind of regulation, but yet in this case, the regulation that might come down from the FCC would ensure, would be good for consumers. It would ensure that these consumers aren't going to get screwed, and that you know, cable providers, the folks who own the tubes, aren't going to turn the internet into another cable TV franchise with all these different tiers, and you got to pay extra if you want to get to certain sites, and that might be a good thing. But you know, they're so afraid in Washington of any kind of regulation, even if it might be good for consumers.
Yeah, and it's interesting that in fact, the chairman of the FCC, Julius Jankowski, was on Capitol Hill today testifying before, I think it may have been a joint committee of Congress, and they were asking him a lot of these questions. But the questioning is becoming apparent that it's starting to break a little bit along party lines, where with the Democrats, you know, being in favor of net neutrality, and the Republicans taking a much more cautious, cautionary approach on new regulation.
And it's interesting because the conservative view here is it would be with the Democrats. Let's keep the internet the way it is so that everybody can get to everything and all the information is treated equally. You don't secretly make certain websites slow to load, so you push people over to another website. That would be, you know, in terms of keeping things the way they are, that would be the conservative approach, and that's what the Democrats are taking.
Yeah, I mean, although I guess the Republicans are saying that it's a deregulatory approach. It's sort of a wait and see. There's no point in regulating something until we know whether it can be regulated, and then the whole debate sort of starts devolving into, you know, what is the scope of what the FCC can actually do.
Yeah, and as you point out, that's still up in the air.
That's right, and that would be something that Congress could step in and clarify, as they could, you know, they don't have to worry about distinction between Title I and Title II because they wrote the titles.
Yeah, yeah.
So they could rewrite the thing and give the FCC, you know, whatever authority Congress deemed fit.
We're talking with James Moskowitz live from Washington, where the sirens are blaring. Before we let you go, you and I were talking one time, and you were talking about how the internet is as we speak, getting congested and slow, and it's slower than, you know, in other places in the world, and yet we're just sort of used to this speed when, in fact, it could be a lot faster.
That's an increasing issue, yeah, and it's. It ties into the net neutrality to the extent that you know that there is a legitimate network congestion management issue that that the service providers have, and you know that was something that came up in the BitTorrent case. Is, you know, we you know, Comcast's position was we weren't really trying to do anything nefarious. You know, we were just trying to really protect our customers who might happen to live on the same street as somebody who's doing this peer-to-peer, running a peer-to-peer program and hogging all the bandwidth.
Yeah, and that's something people may not know. When you get home, your neighborhood, if everybody's watching Hulu or downloading movies or something, they're eating up the bandwidth and they're making, you know, they're making it slower for you.
That's right. That's right. And if there's somebody there who's exchanging video through a peer-to-peer service, you know, they may not even know how much bandwidth that they're hogging up on the network because it's invisible to them, but just by virtue of the way these peer-to-peer networks function.
Yeah, and this is something that the Comcast of the world, the folks who own the tubes, quote unquote, they're monitoring this. They're seeing this happen.
That's right. That's right. No, they have tools and capabilities that manage the network and they see where it starts getting congested and as more and more applications come online, which you know we're seeing it daily with you know the latest Apple products and what have you, all of these things take a lot of bandwidth, and the congestion is going to become increasingly a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you see companies like Google, where they're trying to make it so that applications you might need that historically we've gone to the store and bought or have come with our computer, Word and spreadsheet programs, they want to provide all this online. So you don't need the programs on your computer. You would just access them online, but again, that's only going to add to the congestion as that becomes the norm.
That's right. And incidentally, that's the whole purpose behind the FCC's recent broadband plan was to have the government do what it can do to promote the development of a faster network all the way around, so that we can see, you know, a robust development of all these different applications without the whole internet sort of grinding to a halt under the weight of,
yeah,
of the increase.
But again, will America have the, are we going to see the political will to actually get behind a national broadband plan as the, you know, the interstate highway system of the 21st century? And I think that's still up in the air as well.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, there's definitely parts of the broadband plan that, that sort of require the American people to write a check, you know, through their representatives in Congress. But there are other parts of the broadband plan that the FCC is working on that, you know, really are kind of inside baseball type things. You know, for example, they're proposing to shift all of the universal service away from regular voice services to support the deployment of broadband facilities and getting rid of access charges, which is the amounts that the fractions of pennies that, that long-distance providers pay to local providers when you make long-distance phone calls. And these are really big deals for the carriers, but they're not necessarily something that I think is going to be a huge sort of political issue. I mean, the universal service is going to be a political issue, but sort of as a rural versus,
yeah,
versus urban type of dichotomy.
James Moskowitz is with Fleischman & Harding in Washington, D.C., an expert attorney doing work in telecommunications, broadband, cable services. And, James, we're going to have to talk to you again. I could talk about this stuff all day. I find it really fascinating.
Yeah, this was fun. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.